Welcome to the Freedom Report, broadcasting from Washington, D.C.
Welcome to the Freedom Report. I'm your host, Austin Peterson. Who's Austin Peterson?
Liberty champion Austin Peterson, this Justin Bieber lookalike, and a powerful advocate for liberty.
Who's Austin Peterson? I'm an American. I love life, liberty, and family, but I'm not a conservative. I'm a hardcore libertarian. What am I doing here? I'm trying to restore the republic. The Libertarian Republic is a website aimed at furthering the ideas of economic freedom and personal liberty. I don't really care about parties. All I care about are ideas. And the one idea I care the most about? Freedom! That's right, pure freedom on the Freedom Report podcast.
Welcome to the Freedom Report. First, a message from our sponsors. The Libertarian Republic is brought to you in part by Amagi Metals. Amagi Metals is TLR's trusted metals dealer, and their mission is to help simplify the buying process of metals while illuminating the importance of financial responsibility and sound money. So, if you've been thinking about getting into metals, go to amagimetals.com and check them out. That's amagimetals.com. During the month of February, enjoy discounts and silver giveaways to commemorate Amagi's 4-year anniversary. Check out amagimetals.com anniversary.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Austin Peterson here at the Students for Liberty Conference in Washington, D.C., and I have a very special guest. His name is Dr. Jim Lark. He's a professor at the University of Virginia for Systems Engineering. He's a libertarian radical and on the Board of Advisors for Students for Liberty. Jim, welcome to the show.
Austin, it's great to see you again. Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the things that we've been debating online with my website, this is the Libertarian Republic.
Oh, yes.
And the issue of the non-aggression principle and whether or not it can sort of always be perfectly applied across the board. Now, you gave a speech here talking about challenges to libertarianism. And one of the things that I like to do is I consider myself a libertarian, but I'm willing to even challenge my own beliefs, the things that I hold dearly. You know what Thomas Jefferson said, question boldly, even the existence of God, you know, and so, because he thought that it was better to, you know, to question your own beliefs rather than to sort of attribute everything to dogma. So I'm just curious. Do you think that the non-aggression principle is more of a guideline, or is it an all-encompassing rule?
I consider it an all-encompassing rule. However, it's very difficult to know how it actually applies. The talk that I gave yesterday, Challenges to Liberty, basically invited libertarians, I would even go so far as to say demanded that libertarians examine their assumptions about how does this notion apply. For example, I started off by asking the question, how do we justify ownership of real property? How can we tell that what's thine is thine and what's mine is mine? How can we tell if this is indeed your property? Even if we can come up with a justification, say, for real property, how do we justify subsidence rights? In other words, is that pool of water underneath your property, how do we say that that's your pool of water? If somebody wants to fly an airplane over your property, how, you know, can he do so?
Right. If you find a vein of gold running underneath your property and it goes into both neighbors' property, how do you divide
exactly.
it up?
Exactly. I have a pool of water, for example, under my home in Albemarle County. Does that give me the right to suck it out as fast as I can pump it out? Mm-hmm. Does that make it mine? And I think we libertarians, we talk in many cases rather snottily about property rights and the non-aggression principle. Well, if the property rights are not properly defined, then what is aggressive and what is not aggressive, you know, it depends upon, it could be, you know, beauty is in the eye of the beholder. If we don't really have a good conception of what property rights are, mm-hmm. then that which I would consider aggressive or rights violative action, you might say, no, you've got it completely reversed.
Yeah, see, one of the things that someone floated was that libertarian philosophy is good, but that it also needs to be tempered by the common law. The common law being that we have, you know, hundreds of years of jurisprudence of good court decisions that have laid down, that have been set in stone in order to protect what we call natural rights. And so do you think that there, where the non-aggression principle fails, that common law can pick up?
I'm not sure that, again, when we look at this, I think that it's important to believe that non-aggression principle, I think, is truly a great principle and should be applied everywhere. It's just we need to realize that some cases it's not clear what the property rights are. Mm-hmm. I mean, how do you define, for example, example, when somebody's playing their music too loudly. When is too loudly too loudly?
Right. How can you define harm?
Exactly. Well, I gave an example in my talk yesterday. A few years ago in Albemarle County, where I live, Board of Supervisors wanted to impose a light ordinance. In other words, if you have an automobile dealership on Route 29, the idea was that you had to shield your floodlights from projecting upward. The idea was that people like me out in the county would like to be able to enjoy the pretty starry sky. My original thought was this is another example of knee-jerk regulation by the Board of Supervisors in Albemarle County. Then I started thinking about it. What happens if somebody wants to put a huge light that will burn eternally and will turn night into day forever? Does that person have the right to do so? And I think it's very important that we libertarians establish the highest level of intellectual integrity, the point that you were making about always challenging your beliefs. We ask that other people challenge their beliefs. We can be no less scrupulous in challenging our own. And there are many people who are actually libertarian. Libertarian's an adjective as well as a noun. There are many people who are actually libertarian in their outlook, but they have very different sets of how property rights should be founded. And I think that we have to exercise a certain degree of humility. The non-aggression principle works, but it works once you've established what the property rights are. And in many cases, those property rights are not at all well established. The common law is a way that allows people, hopefully peacefully, to be able to deal with all of these frictions. And by the way, John Hosness has done a very nice job about writing about applications of the common law and dealing with many of these social frictions.
Okay, so speaking of social friction, there was a lot of friction last week when Iran threatened to send warships to the maritime border of the United States, which a lot of people would say was fairly hostile. Now, you and I were talking earlier about, like, is it considered aggression if I point a gun at you but I don't shoot it? You know what I mean? So one of the things that I want to talk about, you know, is nuclear weapons, because I think just like with some people, it's a trigger word for libertarians.
When pun intended.
Yeah, it's when they say nuke, when they say nuke 'em, that's a trigger word. But here's a question for you. Now, a lot of libertarians, people like Anthony Gregory, a lot of people at the Independence Institute, they argue against the use of nuclear weapons in any situation because they say you cannot know how many civilians will be harmed, innocent bystanders will be harmed for the use of nuclear weapons. Now, Joe Biden, when he argued that citizens should not own an AR-15, he made the argument that if you use an AR-15, it could go through a wall and harm an innocent citizen. You don't need an AR-15. Buy a shotgun, he said. Now, libertarians are essentially making the Joe Biden argument here on nuclear weapons. You don't need to use nuclear weapons because you can harm an innocent civilian. However, Harry Truman arguably was using a nuclear weapon in what he saw was self-defense, not only for self-defense of Americans, but what he saw would be a loss of civilian lives who were being told to meet the Americans on the beach of Okinawa if we invaded. So what I'm asking you is there ever a case where a nuclear weapon could be used if it's in legitimate self-defense, even if that means that innocent civilians could be harmed?
Well, when one applies, I think, rigorously the analysis of possibility of harm, pretty much any time you deploy any weapon under any circumstances, it is very hard to say ex ante the probability that there will be some form of collateral damage is zero. So if you believe that, in other words, if I have my pistol and I'm pointing it at you, yes, it's possible that you're right in front of me, and if I deploy the pistol, fire a pellet, that bullet, there is a non-zero probability, maybe small, but a non-zero probability that that bullet may penetrate you, ricochet off some wall. It's very, very difficult to suggest that the probability is zero that your actions will cause harm to others. And if you take these notions seriously, if you really apply them strictly, one could take the argument that some people are making and essentially lead to the idea that you can't actually deploy weapons at all of any sort.
Right.
So the nuclear question about the possibility of fallout, again, no pun intended, is a difficult one. I look at weapons of that sort basically being for deterrence. The idea is that you basically tell people you do something bad, and we're going. Unfortunately, this is one of those horrible issues. I'm not sure sure that there is any the libertarian answer. I think that libertarians will have different perspectives. I don't think the libertarian philosophy, by the way, commits us essentially to stand by and be slaughtered while because we don't want to risk any possibility of damage to innocent people. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, pretty much any sort of action you're going to take in a world of war, you're going to run some risk. It may be very small, but you're going to run some risk of hurting other people. I think the most important thing is you don't intentionally hurt other people, and you try as much as possible to reduce the risk. But there are plenty of examples. I think it's not that hard to come up with. There are plenty of examples where someone is basically taking an innocent person hostage. He's potting away at you. The only way you're going to be able to defend yourself is perhaps to take a shot to protect yourself, and you run the risk of hurting somebody else.
Right.
And this is something.
So intent matters. It's really, it comes down to intent.
And also, libertarian philosophy, a friend of mine's, the late Steve Reed, pointed out, libertarian philosophy, like pretty much all philosophies, don't handle lifeboat issues all that
right,
well.
Right, right. Or even a stowaway, for example. If someone like stowed away on your boat, they've committed a you know, violation of your property rights, but if you're in the middle of the ocean, do you have the right to just dump them in the ocean?
Right. That's I'm not saying right in the sense that I agree with that.
No.
Now, there are lots of hard questions. And one of the things, and maybe it's just because I'm getting older, every time I thought I had this libertarianism stuff figured out, life presented me with real-world examples where I realized that my nice, pat solutions perhaps didn't lead where I wanted them to go. And they forced me to do as you suggested. You have to constantly examine your assumptions, your biases.
Mm-hmm. Good. All right. Well, Dr. Lark, so what's next for you on the conference? What are you looking forward to?
Actually, I had the honor of giving my presentation yesterday, which means I now have the opportunity to wander around and attend all the talks that I might have missed had I been giving a speech today. The great thing about the Students for Liberty Conference, and I've had the honor of speaking at all seven of them, is they bring wonderful speakers who are giving substantive talks about interesting issues. It is an extraordinary intellectual feast, and I'm about ready to go gorge myself.
All right. Well, don't get sick. All right. Thanks a lot, Dr. Lark, for your time, and thanks for joining us on
the show. Austin, again, thanks for the invitation. It's great seeing you again.